Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday morning, and this is Blog Talk Radio, The Cosmic Citizen. It's a beautiful day here, and I welcome you to our show. Today we have a very special guest, one dear to our hearts, and here with me right now is my dear friend and co-host, Crystalyn Beek-Larson. Hi, Crystalyn.
Good morning.
Good morning. I know that you are so excited about this show, and I am so pleased and happy to announce that we have Dr. Margaret Paul with us on the line. And I know that you really want to introduce her, so why don't you give us some of your background, and first we'll say, hi, Margaret, good to have you on the show.
Hi, I'm looking forward to it.
It's so great. Okay, so take it away, Kristen. Tell us a little bit about Dr. Margaret Paul.
Well, I know Margaret Paul as a relationship expert, but she's a PhD best-selling author and co-creator of a powerful program called Inner Bonding, which is a healing process. She's recommended by many famous authors, actors, actresses, other celebrities. She was even featured on Oprah. And if you want to listen to some of her videos and share some of her courses with, she offers some wonderful things for free on her website. You can also order some of her books and CDs at innerbonding.com. Anyway, she's counseled countless individuals and couples and led classes and workshops for over 42 years. But I know her work from a seminal work she did in the 80s with her previous husband, Jordan Paul. They co-authored Do I Have to Give Up Me to Be Loved by You? It was just an amazing experience of learning how to communicate and learning the attitude or the place where we're coming from when we're communicating with our loved ones. It's been just incredibly invaluable to me. And then I heard about Healing Your Aloneness, one of her more recent books, and Inner Bonding by our friend and listener, Lee Lotz. And I'm real excited to hear more about some of her newer works, like Do I Have to Give Up Me to Be Loved by God? Anyway, I hope you'll all join me in welcoming her. Good morning, Dr. Margaret.
Good morning to both of you.
And I should say also with us on the line is our other co-host, Andre Rodatis. Andre, are you there?
I sure am, yeah.
Oh, good.
And good morning, Dr. Paul. Very
good
nice.
Good morning, Andre.
Very nice to have
nice
you on
to
the show.
You. Nice to meet you
Thank
on the
you.
Phone.
Yes.
So what we hope to do is give Dr. Paul the first hour to tell us all about what she's doing now and her wonderful work, and then we'll open up the phone line for calls. The call-in number is 646-716-8158. Make a note of it, and we'll take your calls. But first we're going to give Dr. Paul a chance to tell us what she's up to. And
I'd like to just get started by asking you how you got started. I know this was something that you wanted to do very early in life.
Yes, I did. actually, I decided by the time I was 5 years old that I wanted to be a psychologist, and that was a result of an incident that happened. I grew up in a very difficult family as an only child with a very angry, rageful mother, a father who ended up in my early adolescence trying to be sexually abusive with me, and he had been my hero up until then, and I had to stay away. And so it was a very, very lonely childhood. And by the time I was 5, I was a very tense little girl. And so my mother took me to a psychiatrist. And I remember very, very clearly, he talked to me, then he talked to her, this tall, skinny guy. And I remember after talking to us, he looked at me and he says to me, "Now you have to tell your mother not to yell at you." And I remember thinking, you know, I'm 5 years old. My mother is not going to listen to me. Why don't you tell her? And then my next thought was, you know, I could do a better job than you. And and that was my decision. I knew that's what I wanted to do. And I did. So, you know, that was always my goal in life, was to be a psychologist and be helpful to people. So that's how it started.
Oh, wow.
What a moment of empowerment.
Right.
For a 5-year-old, I mean, an early time to learn that you can be the one to say, no, wait a minute, that's a boundary of mine and that's not fair or whatever, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. and I knew that my mother wasn't going to listen to me. So.
That's a great story. One of my family members in the next generation did sort of have that insight herself. I remember hearing from one of my parents once when somebody was getting angry at her, and she said, "You can't talk to me like that." And I think she was probably 3 or 4 at the time, and I remember thinking, wow, kids certainly have a lot more sense of empowerment than we did at that age.
Oh, yeah. And fortunately, by the time I had my children, I was able to empower them to speak up for themselves and to not feel like they did not have power to say, you know, that doesn't feel good, or I don't like to be talked to like that. And I'm very happy to be able to give them the power that I didn't exactly have at that time.
Yeah, well, but I agree that it's not the appropriate thing for a psychologist to tell a 5-year-old.
No.
Yeah, because you don't know what you might be setting them up for. And we've done a whole series on family life and the power of family and how family is the building block of civilization and how good, strong families make a good, strong, civilized world.
Well,
and that
is so, so very, very true. And the problem is that so many people do grow up in dysfunctional families. And one of the major things that comes out of that is they never learn to truly manage their painful feelings. That's one of the main things that happens, is people don't know how to manage their pain. And so they end up taking it out on other people, like my mother did, or turning to various addictions, numbing out, shutting down, and then, of course, not being role models for their children for how to manage and regulate their own feelings. And I really feel like today, like some of the violence that's happening in our world starts with these dysfunctional families where the parents can't regulate their own feelings, they can't manage their pain, they're taking it out on their kids, they're not role modeling loving behavior, they're not role modeling managing their feelings. The children don't grow up knowing how to do that. They either learn to take them out on other people or stuff them down and then eventually take them out on others with violence. And so it's a huge problem in our society. And this is where the inner bonding process comes in, because inner bonding does teach people how to manage their painful feelings in very loving ways. It's a reparenting process to actually change the brain to learn to manage feelings rather than avoid them. And this is one of the reasons I'm so excited about it.
That really is a very exciting bit of news for people, because there's so many people who really get the sense that because I grew up in a family that did this or didn't do that, that I'm really stuck, you know, like this is my lot in life and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yes, and that is just absolutely not true. But the problem is that traditional therapy does not give people the tools to do something about it. It does not, you know, I was in many, many forms of therapy before inner bonding came through from spiritual guidance. And I was in every form of therapy I could think of because I was not happy. And I was a traditional therapist for 17 years, not happy with the results of that. And and with all the therapy that I had, I never had one therapist say to me, you are responsible for your feelings, and here's how to do it. Not one.
Wow.
Yeah, I've heard the you know, admonitions before, but not the process
right
by which we get there.
That's right. And so they, you know, they say to you, well, just learn to love yourself. Well, yeah, okay, how do I do that? What's the process for learning to love myself when I wasn't loved, when I've never seen anybody love themselves? How do I learn to do that? Well, that's
that's akin to telling somebody to lift themselves up by their bootstraps.
Exactly. Yeah, and they have no idea what to do.
Right.
Well, and you know, it comes with what we all would call the inner life and having a rich inner life. And I've watched some of your videos, and I know that that's really what inner bonding is about, is getting in touch with your inner self, being willing to be in yourself. And what's interesting is we've done these series of shows, you came up in the course of our conversation as somebody who can really help. So it was almost like one of our callers actually mentioned you, and then Crystal said, oh, my gosh, yes. And we thought, well, wouldn't it be fantastic to have Dr. Margaret on the show? And so that's how it came to be. And I'm really curious. I know that you came to inner bonding with a colleague. Can you give us a little bit of background about how that happened? And
yes, Dr. Erica Chopich, who's an amazing, brilliant human being, she and I met through a mutual friend 28 years ago. And I had half the inner bonding process because I had been developing the process that you talked about in Do I Have to Give It Me to Be Loved by You, based on intention to learn or intention to control. She had the other half of the inner bonding process based on her background and her experience. And so, of course, we had to meet, and we put together what we had learned, and inner bonding started to evolve out of that. And it's been evolving now for 28 years. It's become such an amazingly powerful self-healing process, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with your listeners.
Great.
Well, we're really excited about that, and I don't want to you know, derail the show, but I also would really love to hear some more, too, about how you got started with Do I Have to Give Up Me to Be Loved by You, since that's the book that really changed my life initially.
Yeah,
and
you know,
I just thought it was so brave. You know, you talk about the process that you and Jordan went through, and I just thought it was so brave for a couple who were therapists to sort of admit their own personal experience in their work. You know, so few therapists seem to be able to do that.
Right. Well, Jordan and I met and fell madly in love, and we were in love for 3 weeks, and then the problem started, and I spent the next 30 years trying to get that 3 weeks back. And during that time is when I developed the understanding that at any given moment your intention either is to learn about loving yourself and others, or your intention is to protect against pain with some form of controlling behavior. And that became the basis of Do I Have to Give Up Me to Be Loved by You? The problem is that what I didn't realize at that time is that while the theory is very, very sound about intention, we can't really maintain an intention to learn with somebody else until we have been able to do that with ourselves. And so We wrote the book. We fought the whole time writing it. And then it came out. It became a bestseller. People were writing us and saying, you know, that's great. You know, our relationship is just like yours. But how do you stay open to learning in the face of fear, in the face of conflict? Well, I didn't know the answer to that. I was not able to do that. And that's when I started to pray for a teacher to come into my life, because I really had no idea how to bring that about. And that's when I met Erica, and that's when we developed the inner bonding process, and I realized, okay, this is basic. This is what people need to learn first before they can actually put that into practice with another person. And
well, that makes a lot of sense.
Right, right. And so that's what I started to do. I started to practice the process very, very diligently and reached a place in my life where I was taking much, much better care of myself. You know, people come together in their relationships at their common level of woundedness, which is what happened with Jordan and I. I was deeply a caretaker, putting myself aside, completely out of touch with my feelings, taking care of everybody, my husband, my parents, my kids, and, of course, to my own detriment, and it was making me quite ill. And he was at the other end of the spectrum, expecting me to take responsibility for his feelings and not for mine. And so that worked as long as we were in that codependent system. Mm-hmm. But when I started to practice inner bonding and I healed my codependency, my need to caretake, well, of course, that shifted the entire system. And my hope was that he would also get on the path of inner bonding, but that didn't happen. And so after 30 years, we mutually decided to separate. We were just on different paths at that time. You know, I was growing in my direction, and he was in his, and we just were not, we were not on the same frequency at that point at all. So it was time to move on.
After 30 years.
Yes, after 30 years, and it was very, very scary for me, because I always wanted an intact family, and I loved him, but there was no way to grow in that relationship, and that's always been so important to me, is to have a relationship that promotes my emotional, spiritual, physical growth, and it just wasn't happening then at that time in the relationship, so it was time to move on. It was very hard. It was very hard because my parents were very angry with me. In fact, they ended up disinheriting me.
Oh.
I mean, I lost a lot. I lost my marriage. I lost a lot in my family. My children were furious, although now we have wonderful relationships. But it was really, really hard. Talk about having to be brave. It was really tough. But I'm telling you that if I hadn't have done that, I think I would have died, because the drain on my energy, on my health, was so huge by that time that I think I would have, like, gotten cancer or something. I don't think I'd be alive today if I hadn't have taken the risk.
Some relationships, I think you can be lonelier in them than you are alone.
That's right, and I was.
Well, and that reminds me of your, you mentioned that you saw A Man for All Seasons and that you were so moved by the courage of Sir Thomas More to live to his own integrity and to be willing to die rather than to sell out his own integrity. And I think really that's what it's about. It's about being, you know, the saying, to thine own self, be true.
Exactly.
You know, first be true to you. And so that's what I get from your work, is teaching people how to get in touch with who they are and be true to that self, even if everybody else gets mad at you.
Well, that's
for doing
right. And I remember the day. I remember the day because I was doing an inner bonding process, and I was letting that inner child in me, my feeling self, really express her rage at me. She was furious at me for allowing, you know, other people to control me and use me and for being a caretaker. And she screamed at me and said, "When is it my turn? When do I get to be loved? When are you going to make me important to you?" I mean, screaming at the top of my lungs. And at that moment, I said, okay, enough. I said, if I lose everybody on the planet and I end up completely alone, so be it. But I am not going to do this anymore. And that was it.
Wow. Mm. That is a moment of courage.
Yeah.
I mean, your story sounds, it's really hitting home to me. You know, because we talked about personality types in the Enneagram, and I'm a 2, I'm a helper. And, you know, you can really overextend.
And I'm a 1 with a 2 wing. And, know, I'm a 1 who has to save the world.
A lot of weight to carry, isn't it? A big burden.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
So one of the things that comes up then is you do this inner work, and when people hear about this kind of work from the outside, this can really sound like a lot of play acting to people. It can sound like, okay, you're inventing pieces of yourself, this inner child, God knows where that inner child is, you know, and I'm speaking to one who's been through a little bit of inner child work. How do you impress upon people then in the process, and maybe you can start to bring us along then, just how this is really doing these kinds of exercises, which seem like they could be artificial at first and certainly don't feel comfortable at first, how do these end up being some kind of intrapersonal work and even spiritual work?
So, yeah, here's the thing, is that, you know, what we call the inner child is our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
People don't have to call it an inner child. It's just that calling it that can help people understand that they have to take responsibility for them, because we know we have to take responsibility for a child. Most people don't know they have to take responsibility for their feelings, for managing their feelings, for learning from their feelings, taking loving care of their feelings. And so maybe this would be a good time for me to go through the steps of inner bonding so that people will understand what I'm talking about.
That would be great.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So step one of inner bonding is being willing to get tuned into what you feel. Now, this may sound easy, but like for me, in my family, I tuned out completely to my own feelings. As a caretaker, I was tuned into everybody else's feelings, and I had no idea what I felt. My feelings were not important. Other people's were. So it took me a long time to move from being external to focusing on others and being internal to focusing in on what I was feeling. And so step one is being willing to be with your feelings, even if they're very painful. You know, most of us grew up with a lot of loneliness and a lot of heartbreak and a lot of helplessness over other people and how they treated us. But these are very big feelings. Loneliness, heartbreak, helplessness are huge feelings, way too big for a little child to manage by themselves. And if we had nobody to help us manage our feelings, as I didn't, then we learn to avoid them. And we learn to avoid them by staying up in our head, by self-judgment, turning to various addictions, by trying to make other people responsible. These are all ways of self-abandonment, of rejecting ourselves, rejecting our feelings, so that we don't have to deal with these very big feelings. And unfortunately, all the ways that we avoid our feelings create painful feelings of their own, what we call the wounded feelings, which is anxiety and depression, guilt, shame, anger. These are feelings that we create by all the ways that we avoid what we call the core feelings, which is the loneliness, the heartbreak, the helplessness, the grief, feelings like that, feelings of life. So in step one of inner bonding, you are willing to feel all of your feelings, recognizing that all feelings are informational. They're all telling us about how we're treating ourselves, about how others are treating us, whether we're being loving to ourselves and others, whether others are being loving to us. And so all feelings are informational. So in step one, we learn to let go of being up in our head and get present in our body with our feelings, wanting responsibility for them. So that is step one. And for many people, it takes, like me, it's a couple years for me to be able to stay present in my body with my feelings, wanting responsibility for them. Then step two is moving into the heart, putting our focus in our heart, and choosing the intention to learn about what's truly loving to ourselves.
That is so important.
Yes, it's vital. All of these other ways that I'm talking about, staying in our head and turning to addictions and self-judgment, those are all protections. Those are all strategies that we learned to avoid our feelings, which we needed to do as part of our survival. But doing them now creates a lot of problems. And so in step two, we move into our heart with an intention to learn. And what that does, what moving into an intention to learn about loving ourselves does, is it opens us up to receiving the love and the compassion and the wisdom of our higher self, higher guidance, whatever that is for a person, God, spirit, teacher, universe, a higher self, whatever it is, however they conceptualize that, it opens. When we open to learning, it opens us to our higher self, our higher mind, which we need. In the inner bonding process, we need to be what we call a loving adult in order to do the healing work. And the loving adult is who we are when we're in an intention to learn and we're connected with our higher guidance, with the compassion, the gentleness, the love, the understanding, the tenderness of our spiritual guidance. And so we move into step two, meaning that we move into a loving adult. In step three, we do a dialogue process where the loving adult self is asking the inner child or asking the feeling self, is there something that I'm doing, some way I'm treating you, something I'm telling you that's causing this anxiety, this depression, this anger, guilt, shame, or is there something happening externally that I need to attend to that's causing this loneliness, this heartbreak, this feeling of helplessness? And so we're opening, we're asking the feelings for the information that we need. And this is a deep exploration process. And if we're treating ourselves or telling ourselves things that are causing anxiety or depression or guilt or shame or anger, then we need to explore what we call the wounded self. And that's just another word for ego. And this is the programmed part of us that has been programmed with many, many, many false beliefs and survival mechanisms. And so we open to learning about, you know, why are we judging ourselves? What do we hope to gain by that? What is my fear of feeling my feelings and taking responsibility for them? Why am I making somebody else responsible? What makes me feel that I can control how people feel about me and treat me? I mean, these are all the kinds of questions that we're exploring in step three. Once we get a full picture of what we're doing, how we're treating ourselves, or what's happening externally with someone, then we go to our higher guidance and we ask two questions. If we're treating ourselves in unloving ways and that's based on false beliefs about control, we ask our guidance, well, what's the truth? I'm judging myself because I think that I'm not good enough, and I think judging myself is going to motivate me to do things right. What's the truth? Does that really work? What really happens when I judge myself as being inadequate or unworthy? What's the truth about that? And what is the loving action? What loving action do I have to take towards myself in order to manage these feelings, in order to resolve these feelings? And if we stay open, we will actually start to get extremely powerful information. Now, none of this is an instant process. It takes time to really get that open. It takes time to access that higher guidance. But with practice, anybody can do this. I teach people to do this all the time, to access that higher wisdom. And this is now how I live my life. I don't do anything without consulting with my higher guidance. I do all my writing, all my work with people, everything. It just makes life so much easier. And so once we learn the truth and we learn what the loving action is, then in step five, we take the loving action, whatever it is we've been instructed to do, And that, of course, can be challenging. You know, maybe you're instructed to stop smoking or eating or eat better or speak your truth to somebody or look to change jobs. Or I mean, it could be any, you know, hundreds of things that the loving action would be, and often they're quite challenging. So it takes courage. This is a process that takes courage. And then once we take the loving action, we go to step six, which is we reevaluate. We go back in and see, how am I feeling as a result of the loving action that I've taken? Mm-hmm. If I'm feeling relief, then I know I've taken a loving action. But if I'm still feeling anxious or depressed or heartbroken, then I know that there's another action that I need to take. So that's a brief outline of the process.
Wow. Well, and one of the things that I've noticed in using the process, both with myself and, of course, with others I'm in relationship with, is that it can, although this takes, you know, it's not something that's an instant, you know, add water and stir kind of fix your life program.
Right.
It is something that you can actually begin to utilize in an instant. I mean,
that's right.
And in my experience anyway, the moment you get into, you know, what I learned from your original work was to move into the intention to learn. And that concept that you can't be protecting yourself from pain and being open to learning at the same time, that those two things were mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
That was a real revelation to me.
Uh-huh.
And I found that some of the examples that you gave in the book about, you know, just the tone of voice difference that happened when you really wanted to know, you really wanted to learn about somebody, like, oh, my gosh, I've been so worried. Where have you been?
Mm-hmm.
Versus,
right.
Oh, my God, where have you been? Do you know how much I've been worried? You know, do you know what you've put me through?
Right.
You
yeah.
know, those two different responses really communicated to the person you were talking to really different things.
Exactly.
One made them feel like sharing, and the other one made them feel like defending themselves.
That's right. Exactly.
And that you could move into that anytime you chose just by being aware of whether or not you want, you know, like whether or not truth is really important to you.
Right.
And if truth was really important to you, then you could really communicate, my intention is to learn about you or to learn about me.
Right.
And I'm willing to hear whatever you have to say because I'm not going to be protecting myself. And
exactly.
that was really life-changing.
Oh, that's great. You know, as opposed to the intention being, well, I'm just going to blame you and attack you and try and have control over you, which, of course,
right.
perpetuates whatever the problem is.
Because
indeed.
You made me uncomfortable. And,
right.
You know, it's such a simple process, too. I'm just so impressed with it. And as you were describing it, a couple of questions came to my mind. One was, you know, in the first step you said, you know, you have to be present with your real feelings and be willing to feel them, and if you stifle them, that obviously causes a lot of problems. Do you think that those kinds of things, and you did mention in your own story that you felt like you were going to get desperately ill if you didn't.
Well, I was getting ill. I was already
right.
getting ill.
So,
yeah.
So there is a physical manifestation as well as other mental manifestations that can happen. People can actually make themselves sick from...
Yeah, well, you know, they've done studies on the cancer personality, and that's just exactly what I was doing. The caretaker who completely puts themselves aside,
mm-hmm.
it creates huge stress in the body. And as most of us know, stress is a major component of illness.
Mm-hmm.
When we go into stress, the fight or flight takes over, and all the blood gets pulled out of the brain and the immune system. And so the more stressed we are, the less the immune system works and eventually breaks down.
Right. Of course. And then you mentioned, and what you were describing to me was really falling in love with the truth. And sometimes the truth hurts, you know. You have to be willing to feel your pain, and then you have to face the truth.
That's
and
right.
You go to your higher self, and, of course, your higher self will give you the truth. And you have to love the truth enough to be willing to act on it or hear it and do something about it. And do you think that, and obviously sometimes, you know, we just play these negative tapes, and the wounded child is maybe just wounded so deeply, I don't know. But sometimes it seems like there just are certain problems in your life that you just can't overcome, no matter how hard you try. Is it that the block is too deep? Is it that you're not willing to really do what you need to do?
You know, I have not found that to be true, that a person cannot overcome something if they're truly open to learning, if they're truly devoted to learning to love themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue. I mean, certainly we're not going to overcome things when we're coming from fear of losing somebody else rather than loving ourselves. But when we get deeply devoted to what it means to be truly loving to oneself, I have not found that people can't overcome something. Now, that's not to say it's easy, because
mm-hmm.
if we grew up in a household like I did, where you don't learn how to manage your feelings, and so many of us grew up in that household, and you know, and grew up with various forms of abuse. And when we're babies and we are not attended to and we're neglected or we're abused in various ways, as many, many, many of the people I work with are, then actually the brain itself doesn't develop the ability to manage feelings. The prefrontal cortex is actually not developed, and this has been documented in a wonderful book called Why Love Matters by Sue Gerhardt. And she goes deeply into the research that shows that when we're not loved and cherished, especially the first 2 years of life, we actually don't develop our brain in a way that enables us to manage our feelings. Now, I have not done scientific research, so what I know is just empirical. But since I have been working with people for so many years with inner bonding, I have seen miracles occur with people who were just unbelievably violently abused. I have seen them learn to, I mean, maybe the brain is actually developing in the way that it didn't as an infant through inner bonding. I don't know. Hopefully at some point there'll be some research to show that, but I see that with the practice, they do become able to manage their feelings in loving ways. They don't have to continue avoiding them, acting out, being angry, judging themselves, turning to addiction, drugs, alcohol, food, whatever. They don't have to continue that because they have learned to bring themselves the love and comfort that they never got as infants and as children. And once they learn to do this, everything changes for them.
Mm.
So I actually think that maybe the brain itself is changing.
Yeah,
that
I think that's true. I think you can sort of train new neural pathways.
Right.
And, you know, when people have strokes or various kinds of neurological damage, they have to sort of retrain themselves how to do things and how to move certain ways, even how to speak. Well, I think we need to train ourselves how to be more in sync with our intentions.
Well, and train ourselves how to connect with our source of love and comfort and bring that down inside and give that infant and young child that love and comfort and security and compassion that so many of us did not get as we were growing up.
And I think to take it a step farther, frankly, not everybody is born with that type personality type that is the helper.
Right.
And some people really do have, I think, a much harder time learning to love other people. They don't have as difficult a time loving themselves, loving somebody else maybe might be much more challenging for them.
Well, you know, that I mean, actually, then we have to talk about what it means to love themselves, because I have not found, you're talking about the taker personality as opposed
right.
to the caretaker.
Right.
And they're not actually loving themselves at all. They're being
right.
self-centered. They're being narcissistic. But that is not at all anything like the ability to bring themselves comfort and compassion and caring. And, in fact, people who are like that have very, very low self-esteem. They're takers because they believe that they're completely incapable of meeting any of their own needs, and they're desperate for somebody else to come along and give them the love that they have no idea how to give themselves. And so, yes, it's a challenging path, but I think it's a challenging path for both takers and caretakers. These are just
yeah.
two sides of the codependent system,
mm-hmm.
and they're
mm-hmm.
just different ways that people have learned to survive. And both of these need to learn how to bring that love and caring and gentleness into themselves.
Andre, I know you probably have a question or two.
Well, not right on the tip of my tongue, but one thing that came up while you were talking, Dr. Paul, about the fact that you know, this avoidance of our feelings and is really a source of the quote from Jung came up for me, which is that all neurosis is the avoidance of legitimate suffering.
Well, right.
That there's this that
right.
ultimately one of the phrases that's come up and become popular in at least pop psychology is the way out is through, meaning the way to actually get out of a problem that one is having that involves that in their life and how we're mismanaging it is to actually go through the problem, to face it squarely and to recognize it for what it is. But oftentimes, you know, if it's really being perceived, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's what I'd like to clarify with you, is part of it that what we're doing is when we get stuck in a problem that happened early in life, is it that we are using essentially a child set of emotions instead of a mature set of emotions mm-hmm. to deal with the problem? Are we
no,
actually
we're,
using
we're,
our
no.
child mind?
Well, yes, we're using our child mind. It's not a child set of emotions, but it's a child strategy for dealing
right.
with it. Believing that the strategies we learned when we were young, which we needed to learn, is what will work now, and they never do. They don't work as adults. And so the feelings are not, I mean, the feelings are just information. The feelings are just letting us know that we're, you know, the bad feelings, the painful feelings are letting us know that we're abandoning ourselves in some way or something's happening externally that we need to attend to. It's how we attend to it that's the issue. And since we learned these strategies as children, if we don't learn new ways of dealing with it, we just keep doing the same thing over and over. We keep turning to the food or the drugs or the alcohol or the anger or the blame or the violence or the TV or the work or sports or gambling or whatever. We keep numbing out. We keep overworking. We keep, you know, all these things. We keep making others responsible. We keep judging ourselves harshly. These are
mm-hmm.
the things that we learn to do. These strategies don't work as adults.
Right.
But
they don't work
people,
as kids either.
Well,
and
they
do to a certain extent. They work to keep away the feelings that you can't manage because
right.
truly a young child cannot manage the level of loneliness and heartbreak that may
right.
be going on in his or her life. They just can't. They would die from it. And so
right.
these strategies do work to keep the feelings away, but they're certainly not healthy ways of dealing with it. And so as adults, we need to learn healthy ways of dealing with these feelings, which is what inner bonding teaches people to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so what one of the steps is going to your higher self and opening up to learn, being willing to learn and hear the advice. What is that like? Can you describe that? What's that like for you when you go into that process? Do you meditate? Do you...
I don't have to meditate. It can happen in just an instant. It's about connection rather than disconnection, which is what we learn to do as children. We learn to disconnect. When you move into your heart with a deep intention to learn about loving yourself, that creates a connection. And this is actually a very natural process. You don't have to spend years meditating to have that connection. For me, I have that connection all the time. I'm always being guided by my higher self. It's a matter of practicing being open to learning with that source of guidance. Now, for some people, they may need to imagine, like a teacher or Jesus or Buddha or whatever it is, or other people, they may need to imagine a light. For some people, they may need to imagine an older, wiser form of themselves in order to access. The imagination can help us to open and access that. But for me, it's like having a very loving and wise and powerful mentor with me at all times. And frankly, I don't do anything without, being guided. I don't put anything in my mouth. I don't take any actions. I don't do anything. I don't counsel. I don't do anything without that wisdom coming through me. By this time it's become so natural. It's just the way that I live my life and do things, but it wasn't that way at the beginning. I had to practice and practice and practice until it became natural. And that is what the practice of inner bonding does, is it develops that ability to connect with that guidance. It's not like I hear this loud booming voice. It's a subtle, quiet. It's a subtle,
small
quiet
voice
thing.
They say, the still, small voice.
Yeah. That's right. It's a still, small voice, but it's there. And when you listen, you can hear it. You don't have to sit and meditate, but you do have to learn to quiet your mind.
Right.
Because the mind will get in the way. The mind, that monkey mind, it jabber, jabber, jabbers. And that's the wounded self. That's the programmed ego self that just wants to control everything. That's what we learn to do, is try and control everything to be okay. Well, the practice of inner bonding helps you to learn to quiet that mind so that it's not jabbering. I mean, my mind used to just jabber nonstop at me. There's no way to hear the voice of guidance when your mind is jabbering at you like that. Now, since I've been practicing inner bonding for so long, since I've taken so much loving action, that wounded part, that ego wounded part that after all comes from fear and is just trying to protect us through trying to control everything, that part of me has gotten extremely quiet. It's like she says, okay, I don't need to do what I was doing before to try and keep her safe, because she's got a loving adult there who does a really good job and is connected to her guidance and does a really good job. So I don't have to jabber away at her anymore.
Uh-huh.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well,
it is.
And it is an art. It is an art that seems to me like, we spend a lifetime learning to listen to our heart and learning to follow its guidance. I take it to heart, no pun intended, that what you say about, that it's no easy thing, because how many times do we not listen to it and then regret?
That's right.
That we didn't, but it is a lifetime practice, really, and I'm quite certain that you get better at it as you go along.
Oh, absolutely.
And being willing to evaluate, that's important, I think.
Do
you have to evaluate the result
you
got? Did I actually listen to my guidance, or did I just go off and do my own thing again?
That's right. And, people often say to me, well, how often do I need to do this? And what I say to them is, think about having an infant. How often do you need to stay tuned into that infant?
Ooh, yeah.
It's 24/7.
Right.
If you're going to be a good parent, it's 24/7. Well, it's the same thing with us. It's 24/7. I call it having your inner baby monitor on, where you're listening inside. I'm listening for my feelings all day long. Most of the time, they're just fine. They're quiet. They're peaceful. They're happy. But if I get any kind of twinge of anything other than happiness and peace inside, I'm right there. I attend to it immediately because I'm aware of what I'm feeling inside. And that's a huge practice. It took me, as I said, years to be that conscious of what was going on inside.
But you are so tuned into it now that you really do literally feel it when you say, when I feel that twinge of discomfort, I immediately go to do the work required to. Yeah, man,
that's
so important, I think.
And
yeah,
it's sort of like developing.
Yeah,
yeah, I love that analogy or that metaphor because, you know, we really do need to stay tuned in all the time, and it's like developing those spiritual habit patterns.
Right.
The more you do them, the more habitual they become, and the easier it is to go there and to tune in.
But, you know, the funny thing is that when I had my first child, I mean, I had never had a baby, but I knew that I wanted to be a loving parent, and I knew that part of being a loving parent was staying tuned in to what my baby needed. Well, before I had the baby, I was a very sound sleeper. I mean, phones could ring. Nothing woke me up. From the moment I had him, a little tiny peep and I'd be up.
Right.
Now, I didn't have to change it. It was automatic. And it was automatic because I wanted to be a loving mother. I wanted desperately to be there for him in the way that nobody had been there for me.
The desire was there.
Yeah, the desire was there. And, you know, it's the same thing on the inner level. When we deeply, deeply desire to be there for our own self, for our own feelings, we learn to do it. I struggled for a long time because I really didn't know what I was doing. You know, it was the beginning of inner bonding, and I didn't understand the whole process. But now I can help people learn to do that much more quickly than I did, but they have to find the desire. That's the issue.
What role does worthiness play in this? Do you find that a sense of unworthiness looms large in this, let's say, self-sabotage or...
Well, here's the thing, is that unworthiness or worthiness is the result of how we treat ourselves. And so certainly we absorbed a lot of unworthiness from our parents and teachers and peers and siblings. We absorbed a lot of false beliefs about ourselves. And then we go about treating ourselves based on those false beliefs, shaming ourselves, blaming ourselves, ignoring our feelings, you know, and that creates the current unworthiness and sense of shame and inadequacy that so many people have. So when you start to focus in on what it is to be loving to yourself, how to talk to yourself, how to treat yourself, how to take loving action in your own behalf, which comes from that spiritual connection, you start to feel loved. And when you feel loved, you start to feel worthy.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me.
Well,
we need to take a
short pause here to let our listeners know you're listening to Cosmic Citizen, and our guest today is Dr. Margaret Paul. We're talking about her work with inner bonding and learning how to love from within. And her website is innerbonding.com. And also, if you're interested in talking to Dr. Paul about your questions or comments, we will be opening the phones shortly. And that phone number is 646-716-8158. And continue on. Sorry about that.
Andre, you were about to say something.
Well, I'm going back to the beginning here and trying to get to some sense of how people might facilitate this process for themselves, because I'm sure what you've seen, Dr. Paul, is after spending a long time with people, and of course it takes what it takes to get people through something, still you say, goodness, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could just get faster?
Yeah, so we have many ways that people can learn this process. And it's learning it and practicing it that makes it faster. We have on our website, we have a free e-course that people can sign up for that teaches them the basics. We have hundreds and hundreds of articles that help support that. We have many videos. There's books, many, many ways of learning it. One of the deepest ways of learning the inner bonding process is a program we have called SelfQuest. It's a computer program that is downloaded onto their computers. It's an inner, it's a very powerful, took us 14 years to develop this program.
Wow.
We've been working on it for so long. But it's a fantastic program, a very, very in-depth program. It takes people at least a couple months if they go through it slowly, which they should, to really go through it. But it teaches the inner bonding process in a very, very in-depth way. In fact, I just got a comment today from somebody that she's had a problem with a friend for a while and has been angry and has not been able to resolve this, and she just went through the 6 steps on the SelfQuest program, and she finally has completely resolved it. She couldn't believe how quickly she was able to resolve the issue by going through the SelfQuest program. So if people go to selfquest.com, they can see a brief video and hear Alanis Morissette talk about SelfQuest, because she's been a big proponent of inner bonding and SelfQuest, and this is a way to learn it. It's a fairly expensive program. If people can't afford it, we have a place where they can click for financial assistance, and we're very, very devoted to getting this program out into prisons, out into high schools. We think that if it could be, you know, given in a high school health class, it would be phenomenal in giving, you know, kids a basis of personal responsibility. We're in the process of translating it into many, many different languages, and we hope to have it available worldwide, because certainly, you know, I can't work with everybody. My trained facilitators can't work with everybody. I mean, I do work with people on the phone and Skype. We have many facilitators that work with people on the phone and Skype, and those are ways of learning it. I do workshops. I do 5-day intensives. It's a very, very deep way, all of which people can learn about on the website. I give free webinars every few weeks, which anybody can attend. So there's many ways of learning this. We have a wonderful, compassionate and supportive membership site with different levels of membership depending on the benefits, and this is a wonderful way of learning the inner bonding process. And, I mean, we've made it very affordable for anybody. If people have no money, there's still many ways of learning the process. And so if somebody is really devoted to learning how to be truly loving to themselves, and then, of course, the ultimate goal is being able to share your love with others. You know, you can't really share love with another person from an open heart unless you're bringing that love into yourself. And in my experience, the highest experience in life is the sharing of love with somebody who is also open-hearted. And so this is the huge benefit to relationships of practicing inner bonding, is that you reach a place in your heart, in your soul, where you can truly share love with another person and with your children. It's just incredible for parenting. And so that's what's available. And truly anybody who's very devoted can learn this in many different ways.
And how does learning the process affect or change people's relationships?
Well, the major cause of relationship problems is self-abandonment. When you're abandoning yourself with addictions, with staying up in your head instead of your heart, with judging yourself, with making the other person responsible, and that's what a codependent relationship is, eventually both people get very disillusioned. They're not taking care of themselves. They're angry that the other person isn't loving them in the way they want to be loved. And that's the major cause of divorce. Well, when each person decides, or even one person decides, to start to take care of themselves, they change the whole system. Now, hopefully, when they change, the other person will too. That didn't happen in my marriage, but it does happen with most of the people that I work with. But, of course, it's ideal when both partners are learning and practicing inner bonding. And I very often get couples at my 5-day intensives, both wanting to learn to love themselves so that they can truly share their love with each other, and it's highly successful when they do. And so it's this is what couples need to learn. They need to learn to stop blaming. They need to learn to stop focusing on the other person and what the other person is doing, and instead learn to focus on whether or not they're taking loving care of themselves and whether or not they're being actually loving to the other person. You know, most people are so aware of how they're not being loved by that person, but they're not aware of whether they are loving themselves and loving the other person.
Good point.
Yeah, and most people go into a relationship. They want to get love. They want to be loved. They want somebody to fill them up, fill up the emptiness inside that's coming from their self-rejection, their self-abandonment. And rather, I mean, there's only two reasons to be in a relationship. One is to get love, which is what the wounded ego self wants, and the other is to share love, which is what we want to do when we're filled up with love and we're operating as a loving adult in our heart. And most people, frankly, want to be in a relationship to get love, and that just doesn't work.
Well, and
right.
It really seems to be the key.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
It really does seem to be the key. You know,
yeah,
we have to learn how to be friendly before we can have friends.
Yeah, that's right.
And we have to have a basic sense of self-esteem and self-worth and self, you know, not love of self, but a loving attitude towards ourselves.
That's right.
And our own needs before we can come from a place where we can give that to anyone else. And, you know, even with the, you know, you mentioned takers and caregivers.
Caretakers,
right. And, you know, for a caretaker, it's important that, you know, if you want to lovingly serve your family, your friends, your children, the desire is there. But if you have abused yourself, there's not much left to give, you know. So it's so important to get that first step right, to heal the self so that the self can be more effective in giving and teaching and helping in whatever it is that, you know, we have to give the world.
Well, and caretakers have a hard time understanding that caretaking, giving yourself up and taking care of somebody else, is a form of control. I thought I was being so loving by taking care of everybody. It was such a shock to me to realize that, in fact, it's controlling. I was taking care of them in the hopes that they would take care of me.
Uh-huh.
And then when they didn't, then I was angry and resentful. And so it's just another form of self-abandonment to caretake others rather than, you know, take loving care of yourself, as you said, so that you have that love to share.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a joy to give to others. I love to give to others. But if we're giving from an empty place to get back, that's just another form of control.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a caller that's been hanging on quite a while and wanting to say something to you. So, and we've reached our hour mark, so I'd like to put this person on if we could.
Great.
Area code 281, you're with us on Blog Talk The Cosmic Citizen with Dr. Margaret Paul. Thanks for holding on.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, hi, my name is Lisa, and Dr. Paul, I am such a disciple of yours. I've been practicing inner bonding for a while now, a few years. But I'm still a real beginner, is all I can say about that. And what happens to me at this point about this one issue is that I'll get to the step where, I've gone through the steps where I've explored I've explored, and I know that I had a very authoritarian upbringing and things like that, and that these are kind of the roots of what this problem is. And then I get to the step of taking action, and it's like I'm just still trying to push myself around, and it's usually about getting my paperwork in on time, and I have a very, very loving boss who just, you know, doesn't even mention it and just lets me get away with murder and then speaks to me very gently and nicely at the final hour. And then the other thing is I'm a borderline hoarder in that my house is just so messy all the time, and then the other thing is I'm obese, and to get myself to exercise, it's just I'm trying to make myself do it and push myself around.
Okay, so let me start with that, Lisa, because when you're trying to make yourself do it and push yourself around, that is a wounded part of you that's acting just like your authoritarian parents. That is a authoritarian wounded part of you that's going to make yourself do it, make yourself eat right, make yourself exercise, make yourself get your papers out. Now, given that you grew up with an authoritarian parent, was it both or just one of your parents? Who was the authoritarian in your family?
Well, my dad was my real caretaker, and he was abusive and authoritarian, and my mom was neglectful and was a professional, who would come home on the weekends type thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so neither one of them role modeled any personal responsibility for you to see what that was like, and the chances are, because your father was authoritarian, that you developed a young part of you that is resistant. So
yeah.
I want you to imagine that there's an inner power struggle going on. There's an authoritarian part of you that's got your father's voice telling you, you got to do this, you better do that. Then there's a resistant part of you that learned to do that when you were young. Well, that creates an immobilization inside. It's like two ends, people at two ends of a rope, and they're each pulling, and they're immobilized. And as long as this authoritarian, wounded part of you is in charge, which is not at all a loving adult, you're going to resist cleaning your house, you're going to resist eating well, exercise, getting papers in, because that little resistant part of you is basically saying, if I give in, I'm going to lose myself. The only way that I can retain a sense of self is to resist. And that was likely true as a little girl, that was your way of maintaining a sense of self, to resist in little different ways that you could. The problem now is that it's a wounded part of you in charge. It's not a loving adult in charge. And until you practice opening to learning with your guidance and developing a very compassionate, kind, caring, and gentle aspect of yourself that tunes into what you want, not what you should do. You see, as long as you've got this wounded part telling you, well, I should clean my house, and I should exercise, and I should get the papers in, that just creates enormous inner resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to practice developing that loving adult self, connecting with your higher self, and really tuning into what you want, not what you should do, but what you want. What do you want? Do you want a clean house, or is it fine to keep it messy? Do you want to get your papers in, or would you rather wait until the last minute? Do you want to eat well and exercise, or is it okay to just keep doing what you're doing? You need to tune into what you truly want for yourself. And when you really want it, you will do it. We do what we want to do. Right now, what you want is to resist being controlled. That's your God. Not being controlled is your highest priority.
Mm-hmm.
And until it shifts to loving yourself being your highest priority, nothing's going to change.
Right.
Does that make sense to you, Lisa?
Total sense. And, you know, I was listening to one of your webinars before I got the email that you were on the radio, and, you know, you were talking about put your hands over your heart, you know, when you're having one of these things, and or when you're having a feeling, you know.
Right.
And that's what we really start doing, and because I think that's where it is for me.
Yes, and this is what I recommend. I recommend to help people get inside their bodies is to actually put their hand or both hands over their heart to help them move out of their head and help them move into their body and help them remember to be in compassion Inner bonding, as you know, is a very gentle process. It's not about forcing ourselves, you know, telling ourselves what we should do or what we have to do. It's about being in deep, open to learning compassion about what's really going on, what's in our highest good, what our beliefs are. And with Lissa, you have a deep, deep fear of being controlled. And not being controlled is a very high priority, which is very understandable. But it's getting in the way of you tuning into what you want. And that's what you need to start to focus on. And putting your hand on your heart can help you get into your heart and open to learning and move into your body with what you want.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I want to maximize my time on Earth, really. So I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. That totally answered my question.
Good. You're very welcome.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was a great question, too.
I mean,
I got a lot out of that, and I really do appreciate you calling to ask, because what occurs to me sometimes is there's a sense of rebellion, Dr. Margaret, and I wondered if you have dealt with that. There's this sense of, you know what, it's the four-year-old saying, you're not
right.
The boss of me.
Exactly.
I have the right to do whatever I want. And
exactly.
Even if that's counter to what you really do want,
yes.
This authoritarian, you know, you just rebel against it.
Yeah, that's right, and that's why it's so important to become aware of that authoritarian part, because that is always going to activate that four-year-old that says, I'm the boss of me, and you can't tell me what to do. Whereas, I mean, you know, like with an actual child, it doesn't work well with children to get authoritarian and tell them what they have to do. They get resistant. They get rebellious. They might do what you want in the moment, but they'll find another way to resist and rebel. And then, of course, all that starts to show up in adolescence. Whereas if you're being a loving adult with the child and you're getting with the child instead of trying to control the child and you're understanding, it doesn't mean that you give in to everything. You're still the parent and you're still going to support what's in the child's highest good. But you're going to do it in a caring and gentle and compassionate way rather than a controlling way. And it's the same thing on the inner level.
Makes sense to me. And so really, essentially, it's not necessarily retooling the parent that you had as much as it is becoming the parent within that you need and want and,
exactly.
You know, the responsible adult that, you know, I guess if you've never had any example of that, it might be hard to know what that looks like. But I think we can all imagine what we, you know, the kind of loving, responsible adult that we would have liked to have had as a parent.
Yes. Well, and this is where our higher guidance comes in. I mean,
right.
When I started doing inner bonding, I just did not know how to be loving to myself. I did not have any role models for that.
Right.
And for many people, even if their parents were loving to them, if their parents were not loving to themselves, they still had poor role modeling of self-love and self-care. And so, I mean, I certainly had not a bit of role modeling for that. And so I had to learn to go to my guidance for that role modeling. But you're right also. Most of us know what it means to be kind. If, you know, if you say to somebody, well, do you know what it looks like to be kind to somebody? Well, most people do know what it looks like to be kind. And they know what it feels like when somebody else is kind to them. And that's what this is about. It's about learning to be kind to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. They just may not know what it takes to get from here to there. Like when you're in a rage or when you're really in a blaming place or, you know, when you're feeling really self-protective
So let me give people some tools right now for that.
Great.
Okay.
When you're in a rage, when you're blaming, of course your intention is to control. You're trying to get the other person to change. You're trying to get them to hear you and to understand how they've hurt you or whatever it is they're doing that's hurting themselves or whatever. But when you're in a rage at somebody and blaming somebody, your intention is to control them. Now, that's coming from a huge false belief that you can, that getting angry and blaming and lecturing and explaining and all the things that we do to try and get people to hear us is going, that these things are going to work. And so in order to do anything differently, you have to 100% accept that they don't work at all. I mean, that, and that's not easy for most people. They want to believe that they're, you know, if they're right about something, that they can get the other person to see it. I mean, especially if they're right about something.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, that they can get the other person to see it. And it just, it's not true at all. In fact, the more you try and get somebody to see it, the more they feel controlled, and the more they go into resistance, and then they'll blame back, and then there you are in a big fight, and it gets nowhere. And so, so the first thing that needs to happen is you need to fully accept that you have zero control over getting another person, especially somebody who's already angry or blaming towards you. I mean, if somebody's closed, you know, this is one of the huge false beliefs that people have in relationships. They think if somebody gets mad at them or disrespects them or blames them, that by getting mad and blaming back, somehow you can get that person to see it. But they're closed. I mean, the only time that we can see anything is when we're open. We can't see it when we're closed. So the first thing is that you need to accept your lack of control, and that's not easy because that feeling of helplessness over somebody else is a very, very difficult feeling. The feeling of helplessness goes back to infancy when we were completely helpless over life and death, and if we cried and nobody came, we became panicked and desperate, and
yeah.
We tried to do anything not to feel helpless. And so that's a very difficult feeling for people to accept, is their helplessness over another person. But it's reality. It's truth. So if you want to live in truth, you have to accept that.
Right. So there is, though, the illusion, and it's a very powerful illusion, you know, in many family systems, the person that has been in control became a master at it. And really did get people to do what they wanted them to do, and really did have them. You know, I think of the narcissistic parent that has sort of like an ironclad shell, and nothing you say penetrates whatsoever.
That's right. Nothing
gets in,
right.
And part of the perpetuation of the system, you know, is that you keep thinking that something's got to get in, because what they're saying to me is affecting me. Surely I can affect them in a similar kind of a way.
But it's not affecting you in terms of your being more, in terms of your feeling loving to them.
Uh-huh. So that's the key. The key to turn this around in one's mind is to say, not is it having an effect on me in terms of control or whatever the effect is, or whether you can get a reciprocal effect in kind, but rather how is it impacting my ability to love?
Well, and is it having control over the other person loving you? And it's definitely not. I mean, the narcissistic parent might be able to control the actions of their children or the actions of their partner, but they have no control over whether or not those people love them or feel love for them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they generally feel very unloved because the people are, they don't feel loving towards somebody who's trying to control. Nobody feels loving towards somebody who's trying to control.
Mm-hmm.
What role does acceptance play in all of this? I mean, as you're going through this process of identifying this inner work, let's say, of identifying these problems and bringing them to your higher self for solution, do you find people who have to come to a process like Andre just gave the example of the narcissistic parent, which we know narcissism is almost an impenetrable shell. You can't get through it. And some poor child has tried all these many years to break through to their parent. Does there come a point where that person can just accept that this parent had a problem, and that, you know, maybe beyond their control, and just move beyond that, just accept?
Yes, that's where I wanted to get to in what to do here, is that when you actually do accept that, when you accept that there's nothing you can do about that other person, that you cannot get them to face themselves, you cannot get them to hear you. You know, there's nothing you can do. When you finally accept that, then you're ready to let go of trying to control the other person. And once you do that, then the door opens wide for you to take care of yourself. So let me give you an example of what you can do. Let's say you're in an interaction with somebody. You're angry. You're blaming. They're angry. They're blaming. And you realize this isn't going to get anywhere. At that moment, again, like I said with the caller, put your hand on your heart and pull your energy inside. Get it away from the other person. Stop focusing on them and what they're doing and trying to get them to change and stop being angry and stop blaming and look at themselves and go into therapy or whatever. Get your eyes off the other person. Bring them 100% inside. Go inside and feel what it feels like to be in this situation right now. Now, if you were really to let in the feelings of being in a fight with somebody, of what it feels like when you're angry, you're rageful, you're blaming, they're angry, they're rageful, they're blaming, they're disconnected, they're withdrawn, whatever, you would feel the loneliness of that. You would feel the heartbreak of that. These are very, very hard feelings to feel. They're all deep heart feelings. But if you put your hand on your heart and you go inside, you will feel your loneliness and you will feel your heartbreak. And at that moment, what you want to do is invite in the presence of your higher guidance, invite in the compassion, the love, the caring. And you want to acknowledge what I do when I'm in that situation. I put my hand on my heart. I go inside. I say to my little girl inside, my feeling self, honey, I know this is very lonely for you. And this really hurts your heart. And there's a lot of heartache with this situation. And I understand. And I'm right here with you. You're not alone. And Spirit is right here. We're not alone. And I'm very kind and caring with her, letting her know I totally understand what the feelings are. And she's not alone with them. And it only takes a minute or two, frankly, before the feelings release. And then I just go and do something else and take care of myself. And I'm not stuck being reactive, because one of the things that I've learned to do in any situation, whether with somebody close to me or even somebody like a checker in a marketer's being nasty, is not to be reactive to them. I don't want another person to determine how I behave. I don't want to react to somebody else's woundedness with my own woundedness.
Right.
I want to stay connected to my loving self regardless of what's going on outside of me. And this is how I do it. If I'm in a market and somebody bangs into me and then, you know, and then swears at me for it, that feels bad. It's hurtful for people to act like that. And I just put my hand on my heart and I go inside and I say, sweetie, I know that hurts your heart. But it's not about you. It's not personal to us. This other person is having a hard day, whatever's going on with them. It's not about you. And I'm right here. And I understand that that's painful for you. And it just releases and I go on.
That is just so beautiful. I think that may be one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard, Margaret, Riri. Because, you know, just an affirmation like that to affirm your own feelings, just to affirm,
right.
That hurt.
Ow. Yeah.
That
right.
really hurt. But
right.
it's not about you. It's
right.
okay, because it's not about you.
They
whatever,
don't even know you.
Yes,
yeah,
whatever that person
right.
is going through, and sometimes it's really helpful just to say a little prayer in that moment
yeah.
for them, too.
That's right. That's right. You know, I do that in the car. People are always asking me, you know, I have this road rage. Somebody cuts me off, and I'm swearing and yelling. And of course, it's to avoid their feelings. They want to try and control something they can't control, which
right.
is only causing agitation, instead of going inside and saying, oh, gosh, that didn't feel good inside, but you know what? I don't know what that person is going through. Maybe their wife is going to have a baby any second, you know?
Right.
And I just send them a prayer and go on. And I don't have to react. I don't have to be reactive in a wounded way. And
you know,
I want to keep...
Very,
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you bring up a very good technique for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
What I hear you saying is you expand the picture, like in that particular case, you expand it from what you think could be going on, I mean, in the small way, and expand it, you know, with some generosity of thought and thinking, you know, they may be having a bad day. That person may be racing down the highway because, the woman next to him is pregnant and about to deliver. Who knows what it is, but, you know, everybody has a reason for doing what they're doing. And yes, many times it's the wrong reason, as we might judge it. But you know, it may just be that there's a good reason why somebody's doing exactly what they're doing at that time.
Well, maybe I can let go of having results of that. Yeah, and let's say if somebody, you know, bangs into you at the market and then swears at you for it. One of the things that I do is, you know, after I've kind of dealt with my own ouch, I say to myself, you know, imagine how their inner child feels. If they're treating me this way, they got to be treating themselves horribly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I feel compassion for what's going on inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
But first I have to have the compassion for me. There's many people that go directly to compassion for the other person, and they bypass themselves completely, and then they wonder why they feel bad. Here they are being so compassionate towards others, but they feel bad. First you've got to bring it into yourself. Then you can extend it out to others.
And can you expand on that? Because I can see a lot of people saying, if I could take a devil's advocate position for a second, I can hear maybe some people saying, gosh, this sounds a lot like narcissism itself. There's a lot of focus on me. It sounds egocentric. It's, you know, focusing on me. So expanding on, you know, why is that so important to be focused on oneself as a preliminary step? And how is that focus, given the context of your first two steps and the spirit guide and all of that?
Well, it's so important because we can't actually be sharing our love with another if we're empty inside, if we haven't brought that love and compassion into ourselves, and then we're being compassionate or loving to others. We're coming from an empty place, and that empty place wants something back, and that's not love. Love has no expectation of wanting anything back at all. It's a free gift that we give from a full heart. And in order to have a full heart, we have to fill our heart with love. And once we're filled up, we naturally want to share that. It's the most natural thing in the world. It has nothing to do with narcissism. It's about love. It's about the true sharing of love from a full heart. And I want to give you a very profound example. The example is Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa gave and gave and gave. But if you read, like, the last book about her, Mother Teresa was very depressed most of her life. She got the call to serve very early, and then she couldn't find her connection to God again after that. And she went to therapists and everybody to try and figure out why was she so depressed. Here she's giving, 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 giving. Mother Teresa never knew how to give to herself. And I saw it in videos at times, like there was one where she was busy and people came to see her and they wanted a picture with her, and you could see she was absolutely exhausted, but she stopped doing what she was doing to go and take the picture with them. I mean, she just gave herself up over and over and over again. So the message to her little girl was, you don't count. You're not important.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter what you need. It only matters what everybody else needs. And that's a major cause for depression, is that kind of ignoring of oneself.
Hmm.
But unfortunately, the people that she went to try and resolve her depression did not understand that she was not at all loving herself.
Hmm.
Right.
That's very interesting.
And, you know, something that occurs to me in what you just shared with us, the example of putting your hand on your heart and going in and saying, it's okay, I know that hurts, but
but I'm here with you, is that reminder of that very fact that no matter what we experience, and, you know, Crystalline and Andre and I all read the Urantia book, and it teaches so clearly what you have described, and that is that this fragment of God goes with you through life, and that it is ever there, ever present, ever ready,
right,
always on duty, never stopping, never going away. It is the quintessential, the ultimate, the perfect loving parent, and it's right in you at every given moment. And so for me, what you said, what you shared, tells me at any moment I can go in there and just even acknowledge that beautiful loving parent is there with me, that whatever I just felt, whatever hurt I just felt because of the abuse of another human being or of whatever situation I'm in, that loving parent felt that with me. And
right.
and that loving parent can say to me, it's okay, sweetie. You're not alone.
Right.
I understand that hurt. I'm here with you. We're together in this. And it's okay.
And it's not about you. And it's not about you.
And it's not about you. And so to invite God into that moment, how often do we all forget to invite God into the moment? And, you know, what's funny is we pray in moments of absolute catastrophe, but so often the little hurts, the little things,
right,
the little challenges of the day, we don't invite him. You know?
Well, and that is the essence of learning to manage our painful feelings. We cannot manage them without God, without Spirit, without that love and compassion. We cannot.
Right.
And so it's essential for all of us to learn to open to that, to bring that in. And see, I also see the child inside, our feeling self, as the spark of the divine. This is our soul self. The child of God within us that communicates with us through our feelings. And it's our responsibility to take loving care of that beautiful, incredible spark of the divine within us, which we can do when we empower ourselves through our spiritual connection with our higher guidance.
That's such a wonderful illustration, too, of how spirit leading and can really come through a child. I mean, any of us who have been parents have had those moments, you know, the literally, you know, out of the mouths of babes kind of experiences where this little child will just come up with the most loving response to something that is just will just blow you away.
Oh,
because
I know.
They're so open to that.
Yeah, I used to call my middle son, he used to come up with these all the time. We called him the little Buddha because he was always coming up with these profound statements.
Indeed.
Well, we have another caller, and I think this is our dear Miss Lee, who is such a big fan of yours as well, Dr. Paul, so I'm going to put Lee on.
Okay.
Lee, is it you?
Yes, it is. And
hello,
hi, everybody, and hi, Dr. Paul.
Hi, Lee.
Hello. I really feel like you're a godsend for me, Dr. Paul. Because I thought, I was like you. I've been to all kinds of therapists for a difficult childhood, but I pretty much figured I was just screwed over because a lot of bad things happened in the first few years of life, and that was, you know, deal with it, that kind of thing.
Right.
But then when I found your book, which is Healing Your Aloneness, and I realized it's a rather old book, but I just recently came across it, and it was like, oh, man, this is the answer to my prayers. This really is. And some of it I had been doing, I guess, intuitively, but I didn't have all the pieces. And so what I really appreciated and do appreciate is that it's the systematic approach that you have because it, you know, I'm fairly new to it, but, boy, it seems to be really thorough. And I think you need all those pieces to get
right
to, you know, to where you want to go.
Right.
I did want to say one thing about the Mother Teresa example because, did that ring a bell with me. In my journal, I grew up very religious in a traditional Orthodox faith, and one of the early beliefs I adopted was to be like Jesus, who was my role model and hero. I needed to be just as sacrificial as he was. So loving God meant never taking care of yourself.
Right.
As though this is what Jesus was.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Or wanted.
Right.
Well, because what was just, what you know yourself, Andre, for being a Catholic, what is drilled into you is Jesus died for your sins. Jesus died for your sins. It's like, yes, you have to suffer in order to be good. And so, because you've already been so bad, he had to die, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
At
yeah,
any rate,
right.
I'm also, Dr. Paul, have you been touching on your latest book already, Do I Have to Give Up Me to Be Loved by God? Because I'm, you know, I'd just love to hear you talk about that a little bit if you have time.
Well, that is the latest. It was still a while ago because since then I've been just, you know, writing. I write 3 articles a week for the website and the Huffington Post, and that's where my writing has been. But yes, that book is a very, very complete book on the inner bonding process. It goes deeply, the first part of it goes deeply into what keeps us from our spiritual connection, the beliefs, the resistance, all the things that keep us from that. The second part of the book goes very, very deeply into the 6 steps of inner bonding. And the third part is about loving action in different situations, in relationships, with ourselves, with work, with passion, with health, just a whole lot of different areas of loving action. So it is the most complete book of the inner bonding process. But, you know, I'm always in evolution. I am constantly practicing the process, constantly connecting with my guidance, and so constantly new information is always coming in, and that's where I write about it on the website at innerbonding.com. I write an article a week for the public site. I write an article a week for the member site, and I write one for the Huffington Post. So, you know, that's the most updated. Do I Have to Give It Me to Be Loved by God does lay the whole thing out in one book.
Oh, that just sounds fantastic. And I was a really ardent but short-term follower of your site. Then I developed something called electromagnetic sensitivity, and I couldn't go near my computer after that. But it is just a wonderful site, and all the stuff that you have on there, including the webinars, are so good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And it's so nice that you offer your webinars on your site for free, because there's so many sites that you go to for help that, you know, you sort of feel like you're really just getting sucked into a, you know, something that really just touches on the surface, and that you're going to have to pay the big bucks to get to the real meat and potatoes sort of that they have to offer. But that isn't the case with your site. I mean, you really can get a lot from the parts that you offer to people for free, and I just wanted to commend you for that. That's really, really nice.
Well, and we have a place on our site called Free Help, and we have this divided into relationships, parenting, personal growth, spiritual growth, and addictions. And within that, there's many topics. And if you were to download one of the topics, you will get a video, you will get a packet of articles, and you will get either generally a webinar. So there's a lot of information that's available there entirely free in that place on the site called Free Help.
And that is at innerbonding.com?
Right. That is on innerbind.com. If you click on the menu part that says Learning Center, in the Learning Center, you'll see all the various ways that you can get free help.
Great.
And, you know, Dr. Paul, the fact that your work is so spirit-based or higher power-based, however you want to say it, it's so genuine and authentic. And, I mean, it even shows up in what Crystalline just said, that you really are there to help people. And then, of course, for more extensive help, you know, there's a membership fee. But overall, I mean, your overall thrust is of the spirit, and I think that's really palpable.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate your saying that. I would, you know, if I didn't have to earn a living, I would just offer it all for free.
Of course.
I really want people to
get it. I think we can
it.
All relate to that.
Right.
Well, you know, you are a living example of, mm-hmm. of what you're teaching, because you have been through this process. You are practicing this process. And now, as a person who really wants to help other people and always has wanted to help other people and maybe went too far that way, you really illustrate how effective now you can be now that you have done the inner bonding and you've done the inner work and you're coming from a place of authentic power and stability. You know, I mean, it's interesting how this whole conversation comes full circle for us on the phone, because we've been talking about how important stability is to families.
Mm-hmm,
And how, you know, and especially to children, how important stability is to children. So you brought it back home to each one of us. How important is stability within yourself, that core being that you are, must be stable for you to bring that stability to every other relationship.
Oh,
and
exactly.
Yeah, and I wanted
to
ask
use an old metaphor, you know, from sort of traditional religion. You sort of have to take the beam out of your own eye before you can take the speck out of your
right.
brother.
That's
exactly
right. That's right. That's exactly right.
And
you know, I want to put in a little plug for my daughter's work, because she is incredible. I'd like everybody to go to her website at conscioustransitions.com. She does inner bonding, and but she works a lot with transitions, the transition to motherhood, the transition to marriage, a lot of different transitions. And she has my two grandsons, who are 4 and 8, and she just writes the most wonderful. She's a really gifted writer about mm-hmm. what you're talking about stability, about being a parent who has the patience to truly be there for what children go through. And she writes about it in such a deep and heartfelt way. I really hope that those of you who are parents, especially with young children, go to conscioustransitions.com and read some of her articles on many transitions, but also on parenting.
Well, that would even apply to inner parenting.
Yes, it
said.
Does apply to inner parenting.
I wanted to just squeeze in one more short thing, which is I have had a tremendous amount of resistance to the process, and I really appreciate at the end of Healing Your Aloneness, you talk about dealing, you know, with resistance and various aspects of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But, for example, I put off writing. I could easily write to the inner child, the letter to the inner child that the book recommends doing. That was easy. But for the child to write back, that I put off for, like, probably 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
But the surprising thing about it was so surprising, and I wanted to bring it up because it illustrates the importance of really knowing what you feel. I'm 62, and for 62 years, I always thought that what happened in my childhood, I was sad about it. I thought I was just terribly sad. But when my child wrote her letter, what she wrote is she was paralyzed with fear.
Yeah,
that was
terrifying.
So startling.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
And that paralysis of fear actually doesn't go away until you develop the loving adult self
mm-hmm.
who can truly be there. Like what I was talking about with the hand on your heart and going inside when somebody is being unloving, that does so much to heal that fear, because finally that little child knows that he or she is no longer alone, that that child is being seen and acknowledged and understood. Mm-hmm. Because if I was in a market and somebody banged into me and swore at me, I would go into a state of terror
mm-hmm.
because it would trigger the terror and the shattering that I experienced as a child. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm just so programmed to feel this fear and this shattering in my heart. But now I don't go there because I'm there for myself. I don't abandon myself. I don't reject my feelings. I embrace them. And I no longer feel that kind of terror and shattering that I used to feel all the time.
Well, that's worth a lot.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
I mean, think about, you know, if we're going to do the inner work, the the Urantia book contains the life and teachings of Jesus, and one of the things it says is Jesus loved to use a parable and three together, and one was about inner work, and the one about inner work was the woman who sweeps her house and finds a coin and then goes to tell all of her friends, look what I found. You know, look at the treasure I found. And what you've described to me is the treasure. It's the pearl of great price to know how to not let life situations throw you into a tailspin. To be able to, and it's worth whatever work you have to do to get to that place where you're able to do that inner work just like that, just in an instant. Go within, put your hand on your heart. You know, and I'm thinking about you. You gave the example of somebody running into you in the store. That if that happened, and I say I'm objective and I'm just a witness of this event, and I see somebody run into somebody else in the store and then curse at that person, and I see that person put her hand on her heart and just get quiet for a moment, my first instinct would probably be to go over and hug her and tell her, way to go. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you for
right.
living that example that you don't have to respond in kind with anger, that you can go in for a moment, get peaceful, find your inner peace, and then move on and move beyond.
Exactly. Well, and this is especially important in relationships because we know that everything that is unhealed from childhood gets triggered within our relationships. And so if somebody is ignoring you or somebody is attacking you or blaming you or shutting you out or whatever it is that they're doing, resisting, whatever, it's going to trigger, you know, anything that has not been healed from your childhood. And it's so profound when somebody is being unloving to you, instead of being reactive, to put your hand on your heart and go in and just acknowledge the feelings and bring that love and compassion in. And it actually completely changes the relationship because it stops your end of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're no longer reacting with your end of the system, the other person is actually stuck with their stuff.
Mm.
There you go.
Yeah, when you get reactive, then they can blame you for being reactive.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're
mm-hmm.
not reactive at all, and you're going in and just taking care of your own feelings and you're not focused on them at all or trying to change them or get them to see anything, they're stuck with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen relationships just change completely when one person is willing to stop being reactive and take care of their own feelings like that.
Wow. Right, right.
That,
and it really
reminds
forces
me
them.
Of,
go ahead.
Yeah, it reminds me of what a corporate coach once said to me. He said, you know, it takes two people to tango, but only one to stop the dance.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. We have a lot of power to change the system.
Yeah.
You know, I had an experience like that with my first husband, who used to like to call me out, and he would goad me into a fight, and by just keeping picking on me until I would respond and start to defend myself, and then there would be a big fight. And I remember I had this epiphany. I was just a young mom. I was like maybe 21 years old. I'm standing at the sink doing dishes, and he's sitting at the table behind me, and he's goading me once again, you know, finding fault and just picking, knowing that I will defend myself. And I literally felt a black cloud come in my head.
Yeah.
It was like it just formed. I just saw it. It was so literal, this black cloud, and it was anger.
Right.
And I remember having a just in that moment, I said to myself, I'm not going to engage. I have a choice, and I don't have to respond to this. And so I just turned to him and said, you know what? That's your opinion of me, but I'm not going to try to change your opinion. I'm just going to go take a bath, or I'm going to go do some laundry.
Right.
And I left. I disengaged from the situation. This was such an important life lesson for me. I went downstairs to do some laundry. I went somewhere I knew he really wouldn't follow. He didn't want to go down in the laundry room with me. Mm-hmm. And in 20 minutes, he was better. Really. And,
uh-huh.
and
right.
it was such a lesson for me because I learned how not to fight with him.
Right.
I didn't engage, and I realized that I have a choice about this. I don't have to go there. I
yeah,
choose
and that,
to go
that
there.
Was wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah. And the other thing that it does is that if you're really, really connecting with yourself, with the love, and honoring your feelings, then you don't have any residue. You don't have any resentment. You're not stuck with, you know, oh, they can't treat me that way, or how can they do this to me, or I'll show them, or any of that. You're not disengaging with anger or blame. When you really go inside and you really take care of your own feelings, then you just let that person do what they're going to do with what's going
right.
on with them. And right. when they're ready to open, you're already open because you've never shut down. You haven't closed your heart. And that's so important. I mean, lots of times people do disengage. They'll stomp away. I'm not going to take this. You can't do this to me. But they're closed. They've closed their heart. And they're
mm-hmm.
muttering to themselves, and they're, I don't want to be in this relationship, and how can they treat me this way? And rah, rah. That's not what we're talking about here.
Right.
We're talking about truly being loving to yourself, truly taking 100% responsibility for your own feelings and keeping your own heart open so that when that beloved person is open again, you're ready to connect.
Right. Learning how to do the dance.
Pardon?
One of the comments made in our chat room just now was, the laundry room, kryptonite for lazy guys.
That's great.
I was just thinking, disengaging is kryptonite for, people who are really, really addicted to getting a fight or flight response from people.
Right, that's right.
There's
yeah.
something about that control or that concept of power, gaining power over someone else, that when you disengage, it just neutralizes that.
Well, and there's another issue with that, and that is that when your husband was goading you, what's really going on here is that he's very disconnected from himself. And one
right.
of the things that we need desperately is we need connection. From the time we come into life, we needed our parents to connect to us with their love. And many of us didn't get that connection. And then we grow up feeling desperate for connection. And we don't know how to bring it into ourselves. That's what inner bonding does, is it teaches you how to connect with yourself. So then you can connect with others. But in that situation with your husband, he was disconnected from himself. He was feeling desperate inside, and he's goading you because any response that you give, anger, defensiveness, whatever, is a connection because
right.
it's got energy in it, you see. And
mm-hmm.
so you're basically feeding his emptiness with any response you give at all.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why it's so important when that's happening to completely disengage, because
mm-hmm.
then the other person gets, you know what, I can't get a connection this way. This isn't going to work for me.
And it's equally important then when they do calm down, like I said, in 20 minutes, to be there to say, okay, now let's have a moment of love and affection. We don't have to be mad and angry at each other. But you're right, it's about staying open, because if I had walked off angry, then in 20 minutes I may have been just as bad as he was.
That's right, mm-hmm. exactly. Exactly.
But in that, he learned that to approach me, to get the kind of response he wanted out of me, that wasn't the way to do it, and that there was another way to get the love that he and respect that he wanted from me by not going there. And
so often people don't realize that by responding with, anger or defensiveness or whatever, that you are actually giving the other person what they want.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That you're feeding their emptiness, which is what they want.
That's shocking.
Yeah,
good.
I know.
It's good. But, Dr. Paul, this is the best theological exposition I've ever heard of a phrase attributed to Jesus, resist not evil.
Uh-huh. Right.
I did not know the fullness of that phrase till today.
Oh, well, good. Thank you.
Well, you know, Jesus was the master psychologist, so
definitely.
And every phrase that he ever spoke, there's such a depth of meaning in it, and you can mine that for meaning forever, I have found. But still, you know, it is about finding the meaning that's there within you and finding the insights and being willing to do the inner work. And I think that's what you're all about. You're encouraging people to do the inner work and that it's not as painful as they think. I think a lot of people are absolutely terrified to look within for what they
need. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, because they don't know how to manage their feelings. That's
right.
Why inner bonding is so important, and that's why developing the loving adult and spiritual connection is so important, because otherwise it is terrifying. If you're going to go in and feel the depth of the pain, the grief, the heartbreak, and the loneliness that's in there, it's too terrifying. But when you develop that loving adult and that spiritual connection. See, when I work with people, if I get the sense, which I can usually get right away, that there's a tremendous amount of pain from childhood, I don't have them go into that right away. I work with them on developing their loving adult and gaining the power with their spiritual connection to manage that. And then we go in, and really the child will let them know, because they won't come up with the memories they need until the child feels safe that there's a loving adult there that can handle it.
So you give them the tools first to go into the lion's den with.
Right, and I don't tell them, you know, you've got to stop all your addictions either, because those addictions are self-soothing, and they don't know any other way of doing it. But once they really develop their loving adult, the addictions naturally fall away. They just don't need them anymore.
Right. It's so true.
This makes me wish all the 12-step groups knew this process.
Yeah, many 12-step people are a part of the inner bonding site because they do go hand in hand very, very well.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, we're almost out of time here, and I want to give you a chance. I'm sorry for all of the other callers that maybe didn't get through today, but perhaps you'll come back on again and talk about, you know, some of your new work as it comes up, and keep in touch with us.
Sure,
but
that'd
perhaps
be great.
you could give our listeners another round of your websites where they can find your blogs. And just to remind our listeners, we're talking with Dr. Margaret Paul, the author of Inner Bonding and several other wonderful books. And what is your website, and where can they get connected to some of this work?
The website is innerbonding.com, innerbonding.com, and they can find many, many free ways on the site. We also offer 7 free days in our membership site for people to try that out to see if that's what they want, and our free course, our 7-day free course, our free help on the site, all the free articles, free videos, many, many ways of learning inner bonding. And then there's also selfquest.com, which is where they can learn about the computer program, SelfQuest, which, as I said, teaches inner bonding in a very, very in-depth way. And on the site, one of the menu items is facilitators. If anybody wants to work with me, the information is there. There's also a list of many inner bonding facilitators. If somebody can't afford to work with me but you want some facilitation, you can email me at margaret@innerbonding.com and get a referral. We also, for the 2 upper levels, we have 4 levels on the membership site. The first one is only $9.95 a month, and it's a read-only. The second level is $19.95. It allows you to participate and interact. The third level, the gold level, is $29.95, and that gives you 6 free sessions with an inner bonding facilitator in training. It's the very least expensive way to work one-on-one with an inner bonding facilitator in training. And then the platinum level for $49.95 includes 8 free sessions and a free session with me once a year and a free podcast where I take questions from the site and do a podcast and go into in-depth, which sells in the store for $39.95, but which you get free for a $49.95 membership at the platinum level. So there's many ways, and if you want to try that out for 7 free days, you can.
Oh, wonderful.
And thank you so much for coming on the show and freely sharing this wonderful information and yourself. And it just has been a delight to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very, very much.
Absolutely.
It's very enjoyable for me as well. I've enjoyed talking with all three of you and with the callers as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Paul.
And thank you for your work. I'm really glad you got that hit at the age of 5.
Right.
Exactly.
You've been a very effective therapist for so many people.
Yes.
And
thank you.
We're really grateful that you've had the courage to do this work.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
God bless you.
Yeah, God bless you. You're a bright light.
Yes, and you and all of you are too.
Thank you. And with that, I guess we've come to the end of another show, and we want to thank our listeners and our callers, and we sure hope you'll tune in next week. Thank you, Kristalyn, for getting Dr. Margaret Paul on the line with us. It's been wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a pleasure. And just to let our listeners know, next week we're hoping to have David Graves from Ottawa, Canada, on to share a really amazing way of dealing with some profound trauma in his life and the reaction he's had to dealing with that. So join us next week for a very inspiring program.
And thank you very much. And until
thanks,
next week.
Thanks, everyone.
You bet.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.